Welcome to After Cana, a Ferris Love podcast dedicated to exploring the vocation of marriage. In each episode, we bring you stories, advice, and insights from experts and seasoned couples to help guide you in your journey, whether you're dating, engaged, or newly married. Hello, everyone. My name is Gabby Quinlan. I'm your host. And today I have with me Judith. She is a Christian dating coach for women. I'm so excited to talk to you today, Judith. Welcome.
Hi, Gabby. Thank you so much for having me. This is such a privilege, such an honor. And I feel like I'm so excited to talk about all of the things that we have planned today.
Yes, me too. It's an honor for me. So glad you're here. So I just wanted to have you introduce yourself to our audience and kind of just tell a little bit about you and how you got into this world of dating coaching. I think that's such a fun and awesome profession. So tell us the story. How'd you get into this?
All right. Hey, everybody, to whoever's listening. My name is Judith Pereira. I come from Mumbai, India. So I'm passionately Catholic. I love Jesus. I love everything that has to do with the Catholic Church, because I feel like it's, I think, the best treasure that we have on this planet. It's so amazing. I'm currently studying in my master's degree in marriage and family therapy. Marriage, family, everything to do with, dating and stuff has always been close to my heart. And as a kid, I used to joke around that I was going to make money off of fighting couples, because that's what I had grown up to see in my parents, in my extended family. And I didn't really know what a healthy Catholic or Christian godly marriage is supposed to look like. And so I feel like the Lord took that really seriously, because now that's kind of what I do.
Yeah.
But the Lord, he has been so grateful. I have been so grateful, and he has been so amazing in leading me to this path, because I never, grew up and be like, I'm going to be a dating coach. Mm-hmm. But the way that he led my heart, my interest, from being in a place where I used to feel that I hated marriage and never wanted to be in it, to then leading my heart to, through my own relationship, through my own walk with the Lord, now being in a place where I'm actually supposed to able to help other women go through this as well, it's a beautiful journey. So that's what I'm currently doing. That's a little bit about me.
Wow. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. That is so cool. And it's so great that you can kind of counsel people in dating as you're, studying to get your certification and master's degree. It's awesome. So that's so cool. So your dating website is called Empowered Dating?
Yes.
Okay. So when did that start? What was your thought process in creating that resource for people?
Mm-hmm. So I started coaching, and I got introduced to it back in 2021, when it was just around the lockdown phase, and everyone was like just in their home, just starting to slowly get out. And I saw this, and I felt the Lord strongly leading me into breakup coaching. So that's when I initially started. Started just helping women heal from a breakup, because that was what I had learned to do in my own life. Mm-hmm. I've been through it so many times that I know how it's done. And Lord sort of helped me put that together.
Okay.
So that was great. And then I was helping women do that. I was helping women to sort of, come out of their pain and start over, because they really wanted marriage. They really wanted and felt called towards having, that kind of a relationship, that kind of a vocation. But I also realized along the way that the reason why we have all these breakups is because there's not a lot of people teaching all of these women how to date in the right manner, which will then not lead to a breakup, but instead to a relationship which leads to marriage, right? There's only two outcomes. Either it's a breakup, or it ends in marriage. It ends in a commitment. And there were so many women that I was speaking to who were just like, I'm dating these guys, but I don't know I cannot see the red flags. I'm not sure. I don't know if they are the one. I'm unable to discern. How do I even go about this whole thing? It's so messy.
Right.
And when I started praying about this, because I felt the need to help my clients further on, because they were now, okay, healed, but they didn't know what to do further. And that's when I was slowly being led towards dating. And it was such a process of faith, because I was like, Lord, I'm not even married yet. How can I help other women sort of, date and find their person? But I feel like the Lord has brought it up about so beautifully, because whatever is being put together through this resource on the platform, it's really not me. I don't really know how it came about. I just have some insights, some learning. But whatever the Lord is doing through that is, I think, so beautiful. So that was my heart behind it. Because now, when women really feel they know what it takes to date, they have the right mindset going in, they have a place where they can heal from all of the things which are affecting them in a negative way, they're a lot more empowered to actually date and be in a relationship that leads to marriage then. So that is the whole aim behind this.
Wow, that's beautiful. What an amazing calling. And yeah, well, we will all, everyone listening, I'm calling you to pray for this work that Judith's doing. That's really amazing. So on your website, I was doing some digging and you described yourself as kind of a hopeless romantic, like a rom-com lover. I'm a sucker for a good rom-com myself. How have those kind of things impacted your view of modern dating? What has that contributed to kind of your perspective on the modern dating culture, the dating scene?
Love this question. So I've always grown up watching, the Barbie movies and Cinderella, and then I watched Cinderella in live action, which was even more mesmerizing. But I think overall, when I got introduced to the theology of the body, I got to know this one term, which JP2 would describe as culture of death. And that's what I strongly believe that we are living in that right now. It's so evident more than ever, because everywhere we go, there is just death everywhere. There is killing, there is abortion, there is everything that we once held true to, our values and things that were beautiful, are now just being watered down to, lifeless things. Then maybe it is architecture, it's, human tradition and values, it's marriage, the sanctity of matrimony. It's all slowly going down. It's all slowly going down. And
Absolutely.
so I feel like I'm that old soul kind of person who really, really values things which are timeless and old, and I feel like that desire to not want to, make it bad. I don't want anyone to spoil it. So that's how I still feel about marriage, because if you look at all of these old, rom-coms and cartoons, because before the whole feminism thing and all began to pour in very generously, you'll see a lot of beautiful love stories where the men are pursuing the woman. Right, and they have some serious integrity, some serious work that they're doing on themselves. Like if you look at Ariel and Eric, like he's a serious dreamboat, right? And
Those blue eyes. Oh my gosh.
so it's such a beautiful thing when men and women both hold to their original standards of beauty and personal work, the inner work that it takes, because that's what the Lord calls us. Pope Benedict XVI always says, right, that you were not called for comfort, you were made for greatness. So I feel like all of those things are slowly dying away, but these old movies, they sort of like they made me realize that, hey, maybe real life doesn't look like this anymore, but this is what the Lord intended. He intended us to come to the fullness of our own potential, walking with Him, and then to be united to another person who also wants God's will to be done in their life. And then you're not just adopting some person to be on your team and hopefully make it through life. Marriage is a game, and so you choose the best person. who's done the work for themselves to be on your team, so you both can serve the Lord, so you both can fulfill His vision for your life,
Yeah.
and really like being that power couple that the Lord brings together uniquely, and believing in love and romance and like just a really beautiful godly relationship. I used to see
Right.
those things growing up a lot, so I feel like that's somewhere stuck in my head and never left. And
Yeah.
I honestly, I'm glad. I'm glad about it.
Yeah. No, I think that's so important to hold on to that kind of ideal of what marriage should be.
Yeah.
And obviously relationships aren't perfect, but if spouses continue to pursue one another, with integrity and with respect and love, I mean, we've talked to couples on this podcast who've been married for 50 years and they're still giggling around each other and like kind of bashful about how much they love each other. And so,
Exactly.
yeah, and I think in our world, it can seem like, marriage is doomed for failure and this kind of love story is not practical or attainable. But it really is if you both, if you and your spouse put in the work. So I love it. Hold on to that and keep telling people about it. I think that's beautiful. Kind of going into your dating coaching philosophies. You mention some strategies that Christian women can use, and I'm assuming they kind of can apply to men too, but dating with intention, what does that mean to you? Why is that so important to date with intentionality as Christians?
I think it's the number one thing, the most important thing. If you're going into dating and you feel that you want to have, eventually end up being married to another woman that matches your liking, being intentional is the best thing that you could do. And I think I've witnessed the, downsides of not being intentional in my own life and in the close lives of others that I'm close with. Because I know how bad it hurts when you sort of just get tangled with another man or with another woman, and then eventually in like 4 or 5 months in, you're like, wait a minute, they don't want what I want, or they're just not like, how did I not see this earlier, that they're just not aligned with what I want. So those things really hurt. And for someone who is, a highly sensitive person or an empath or just, having that godly sensitivity who's not really used to playing around that much when it comes to dating, those things can really hurt. So when it comes to being intentional helps you follow the Lord instead of just your own heart's desires that you feel in the moment. It's a lot about, protecting yourself from sometimes even from yourself. So if you are intentional about dating, about your vocation, you will have already prayed about, okay, am I ready to get married in this next season of my life? Or am I just on this dating app for fun? Because if that's the case, then if there isn't going to be no fruit from what we are doing. And I used to be that before. I was just on dating apps for fun. And when some good, really good man texted me, I was like, okay, but I'm not ready for marriage. I don't want to get married this early. So I think intentionality builds up from the point where you decide that, okay, maybe right now is a good time, that the Lord is calling me to take on responsibility of another human being that I am responsible for to take to heaven. And that is a beautiful perspective, because whoever you are dating as a Christian, them and you are both daughter and son of the Lord. And so if someone is that precious, you wouldn't really want to meddle with, with them if they are not really, if it's not really meant to be. So being intentional really allowed me, when I started doing it, it allowed me to bring the Lord in. It allowed me to be very discerned, to discern properly if they are the one, if the Lord is calling me to go deeper in there or to back off. It really helped me to understand, what are the good, what are the bads, what am I okay with this person's flaws.
Right.
You get to know all those things when you intentionally approach the relationship, when you ask questions on purpose, when you initiate conversations on purpose to understand where you're heading. So
Right.
all of these things helps you to, they help you to prepare for, to love the person as they are, as opposed to just falling in love with the idea or just going in with your most dominant emotion at the time and then regretting it later. Because
Yeah.
that's what we always see in movies and all of these new Netflix shows. Like, they just go wild. Like, they have
Yep.
one piece and then they go all in. And it doesn't really make any sense because they wake up the next morning hungover and then there are all these problems. And it's sort
Right.
of pictured in a way that you have to fight for love and it has to be this messy, complicated, dramatic thing. But no, not really. Not
Yeah.
really. So I think that is what intentionality is all about. You protect yourself and you protect this other person. Whether or not you get married, you still have this respect for them. And then that sort of allows you to know them in a better way, which is good for in either way, whether you break away or you get
Yeah.
married. It's a very beautiful process.
Yes, I completely agree. I could not agree more with you about all of this. I think what was so different when I met my husband for the first time and we started dating, it was so different from all the other guys I had talked to or dated before. Because within the first week, we were having really serious conversations about our Catholic faith, what we wanted our families to look like one day. We talked about marriage, even not necessarily marrying each other, but like it wasn't out of the realm of possibility, clearly. But with all the other guys, I did not see that intentionality on their side. And so I think that's something to look for all the ladies listening. Look for a man who's not afraid to have those conversations, who's very clear about his intentions. And I know we're going to talk about red flags and green flags later, but yeah, I think it's just important to value yourself enough to say, my time is not worth wasting. I'm going to be intentional so that, I can move on to the next person if I need to, and the other person can move on if they need to. No harm, no foul, but like, let's not just drag our feet in this kind of ambiguous state for 5, 6 months and then
Exactly.
get heartbroken. Like, let's be honest about what we want and what we need. Especially if what we want is marriage at the end. I think that's so true. So obviously this is all easier said than done, but what are some of the challenges you see Christian women and just people in general facing today in the dating scene? How can they kind of navigate these obstacles and cut out some of this confusion that we see?
I feel like for Christian women, Catholic women, they would say that it's very difficult to find someone, number one, who values their faith. That's, I think, the most important thing. And to just to find somebody that is godly, who just isn't a church guy, but actually would want to pursue the Lord, who actually wants to, come to church every day or every Sunday and pray and lead a family in that direction. It seems like there's a scarcity of men, who would lead in that manner. And I've seen so many women talking about how there's just not good enough men. Either they're just like, too boring or just too much of a nice guy, or then they're either on the bad side, which is like emotionally unavailable, not ready for a commitment, but still up there in the dating scene, just, floating around in the pool.
Yeah, they don't know what they want.
Exactly. And that is, it's bad for the woman who really wants to be intentional and to be pursued in that manner. And other problems definitely include, even once you start getting together and you are in this early dating relationship, your attachment style clashes with them. Like sometimes you're just very anxious, and they might be the kind of person that is very avoidant, and they want to have their own space, and they're not okay with sharing their emotions, and you take that as a sign of them not loving you enough, and all of these things start to, happen, which then leads to eventually not really wanting, or it does, like, your relationship doesn't progress to marriage eventually. And so, for a single woman who is, single and dating and really wants to pursue the Lord and is open, I would say you've got to know what you can compromise on and what you cannot. Like, I've seen some Catholic women be like, I'm okay if he's not Catholic, he can be Christian, and as long as he loves the Lord, I'm okay with that. If that's your thing, go for it. If you feel like you really want a Catholic man, go for it. If you feel like you're okay, if he, like, his religious views doesn't really matter, then that's on you. But you gotta be honest with what you really want. Don't just, internalize somebody else's opinion or what works for somebody else just because you're afraid of being lonely for a few more months. It's not gonna work in the long run. And you need to differentiate between what you can compromise with and what you cannot. For me, someone who was walking with the Lord was of utmost importance. And that's why whenever we would talk, any person that I would meet, I would ask them very pointed questions in that direction, assuming that they were already having a relationship with the Lord. So if they were not, I almost immediately knew, and then it was not a match. And I had to be brutally honest with myself and with the other person, because sometimes it felt like they had really good qualities, and they did. But the main thing that I really wanted was missing. So you need to get absolutely clear on what you want, because I learned this after a lot of mistakes in my own dating life, that you can be gracious after your marriage, but right now, before you are married, you are allowed to be very nitpicky about everything.
I agree.
And nobody's, you don't have to feel ashamed for doing that. You don't have to feel like your standards are too much. So that is something that can help you. It's going to be hard to find that kind of a man, but it's not impossible. You just have to hold on to your standards, because when you hold on to your standards, everyone else that's under there stays under there. And people who are here, you eventually meet them. But if you feel that, okay, there's a very few scanty people on my level, and you sort of drop down, then you automatically lose the chance to meet those who are on the higher level. And this is a very simple, logical, pictorial representation of what's happening, but we don't understand it because we're all of these emotions, right? Like, I'm afraid of being lonely. It's Valentine's, it's Christmas, I don't want to be alone. God, why, where is my husband? And all of these thoughts in our head. But the Lord says that if, like, I very strongly believe that every person has a vocation, and if you feel so strongly that your vocation is to marriage, to build a godly family, then there's no way that God will give you the vocation of marriage without giving you the man to marry and to fulfill that vocation. So it's just a matter of time. That is, I think, the most important thing, that all of your dating challenges sort of vanish when you stop, entertaining men or guys who don't match with what you want. It's as simple as that. And then the other, I think, the most important obstacle that women have is, they feel like, oh, all the men are not good enough. They're not good enough, right? So, and that is true also. It's true also. But again, it really comes down to that. If he's not good enough for you, it's okay. You don't have to be like, my standards are too high. Just stay where you are. Get really clear on on who you are and what you really want, what your values are, and what your ethics are. If you go in with that mindset, thinking that there aren't good enough men and all of them are doomed, none of them are worth marrying, then it's going to be even more harder to find someone like that. Because that's how our brains work, right? We have something known as RAS, which is reticular activating system. It's the kind of thing, the part of your brain which really attracts familiar thoughts even more. So if you had to buy a car, and you're researching cars online and looking up on about cars on Instagram, the next time you go out on the road, your attention to cars on the street will be more piqued. You'll be more attentive to cars, right? Does that mean that there were no cars on the road before? No, it just
No.
means that you're just suddenly more inclined to paying attention to it. So the
Right, that
same
makes
thing
sense.
applies to our relationships. When you're always thinking about all the bad things, about all the negative things about men, and you're always labeling men like, okay, he's not good enough, he's not this, he's not that. Even if some good man is in your area, it's going to be hard to notice that. So
Right.
having that vision in your mind is very, very important. I fully know that the dating scene is bad, but that's only because men who do not want to be in a relationship or are not working on themselves are also sort of, floating in the pool, like I said.
Right.
But as a solution to that, the only solution is that women keep on to their standards. Because when you do that, the men who are good, who are serious, who are also looking for a godly woman, will eventually find you. It's just a matter of time.
So true. Oh my goodness. So for the people kind of in that waiting period of like, I'm never gonna find someone. What can I do to pursue my vocation even though I haven't met the person yet? Something that I really liked that you talk about in your some of your content is addressing yourself and your personal baggage and working on, you know, the person you want to be before entering a new relationship. What are some things that people can do to really be that person and it that eventually the spouse they want to be, even when they're single.
Yes. So quick backstory is when I was growing up, I am the oldest daughter. And so in my family where we come from, I had to bear a lot of my parents' initial relationship stuff because they were new, they were from two very different backgrounds. And I was born, very quickly into their marriage. And so I was sort of witnessed them learning to love each other, learning to be in a relationship which wasn't exploding every day, and that was something that told me very early on, okay, Judith, if you're gonna get married, you have to be very, very careful, because I developed some serious fears and wounds from witnessing those things. And I think that is true for many of the people, listening to this probably, and even so many more out there. I feel like our current generation is sometimes really afraid of marriage because they're fearing that it's going to be bad. They're fearing that it's going to turn out exactly like their parents, or they don't really want to end up like their mom who spent a miserable life. And so they sort of say that they want marriage, but subconsciously also run away from it. And that, in addition to all the other bad or traumatic experiences that you've had in your life, are all sort of like this baggage now, which you're carrying like a big pile of trash on your back, and it's smelly and it's rotten and it's not good. But you're taking that into every new relationship, hoping that this new person is going to fix that for you. And it's so subconscious, we don't even realize it. I never realized it when I was doing the exact same thing. So lack of confidence, lack of, having a good self-esteem, seeing yourself the way God does, and always putting yourself down, people pleasing or self-sabotaging, negative mindset, dressing in a way that you don't really feel good about, but you still do it. All of these things that we feel bad about ourselves are coming from the past, right? Things that you've seen happening, or you picked up some wrong beliefs about yourself, about the world, or you just developed a lot of, different aspects of your life were shaped and formed because of certain people, and now you just feel like this is you. And you feel that it's irreversible, but actually it's not. And we often find that, I can get this new person to understand me and my baggage, and they'll be okay with it, and they can sort of embrace my baggage. But what you don't know is that they are coming with their own pile of trash, and it's just double the smell now. It's double the stink. So that's why whenever you're getting, entering into a relationship and actually, trying or preparing for a godly, holy, healthy marriage, the first thing you do is you take out the trash because it really comes up, it pops its head at the worst of times, and sometimes you don't even know what's going on. I've seen this analogy so many times when they say that your life is like a glass of water, and there's a lot of like mud at the end. And when you get married and you start pouring water into each other's glasses, all of that mud and the rubble is gonna come to the top. That always happens. No wonder before marriage you feel like, okay, we're awesome, he's awesome, I'm in love, he's in love. Yes, but there's this whole unseen reality, the bottom of the iceberg, which is going to come up in times when you don't expect it to. And then it's going to be like, okay, why did you do that? I didn't even hurt you that much. But you don't know that what they are doing is not actually what you did, but it's that big pile of junk. So that's why it's so important to heal. So if you're preparing for marriage and if you feel that I have some serious stuff to heal, take it to Jesus. Start listing down all those things. And working with somebody else has helped me personally a lot because I realized that being the older daughter, I was sort of like this, living in hyper anxiety, always having the need to perform. In my house, I became like this golden child through which my parents felt like they had achieved something in their life by my grades and by my good behavior. So as a child, I always learned to suppress myself to, be okay and not ruffle more feathers because everything around me was already so erupting and always, on the go, so chaotic. So that's what I learned was love. When I thought love, I immediately, pictured some sort of a very up and down volatile relationship. And those are the things that you need to heal. So when it comes to your love language, your attachment styles, the way that you perceive love, sometimes you have to unlearn and relearn things about love. I remember when I was just introduced to YouTube. And I started watching this very favorite YouTuber of mine. They're a couple, Jess and Gabriel Conti. They were very cute and very sweet. And I remember watching them, binge watching them like 4 or 5 videos at a time. And I'm like, they are so sweet. And I never saw that kind of love being modeled in anyone that I knew around me. And that sort of had to, I relearned that. I had to unlearn my old model of love and relearn this new thing because I always had it there, but it never really was modeled to me. And so I would not find something that I didn't know what it looked like, right? You can't search. If you're searching for something, but you don't know what it looks like, you can't find it. So many a times we have to learn new models of love. It's like we have this love template, and then we which has been formed by the way that our parents treated us or early caretakers, our wounds, our problems. It's all in that wound, in that template. And so you will only attract people who fit into that existing template. Anyone who's too nice or, too good, it'll be like a collision course. You'll crash with time. And then you sort of subconsciously just move them away because it's unfamiliar. Our brains always attract what is familiar. So those are the things that you need to heal. That's the number one thing you need to do when you say that you are preparing for marriage or are approaching dating. I think the next big thing is to come back to your feminine self. I love that Pope Saint John Paul II talks about the feminine genius in, so much of what he has said because I think he truly caught the idea of how God has made women. And many a times, we just sort of women sort of have learned to keep their femininity at the side and put on this manly gear because how else will you survive the world? How else will you get through life? But you cannot attract a masculine man by being masculine yourself. Because the very fact that he's masculine means that he is looking for a feminine. If he's
So
not
true.
looking for feminine, then he's not really masculine.
Yeah.
That's it's a very simple, statement right there. Because a man, he will do everything to provide the structure and the protection and the providence, but it's a feminine woman that he seeks because she's the one who brings the warmth, the beauty, the joy, the playfulness, the wildness of a home. She makes those things. And any good man who wants a wife, who wants to commit, will never be attracted to a woman that's masculine, that's afraid of receiving.
Right.
So when I learned how badly I was wounded in my femininity, I really had to come back to the Lord and allow Him to take charge of my life. Because being masculine meant that I wanted to write my own story, I wanted to make my own choices and keep the Lord out of it. But I have learned that the best way to heal your femininity and come back to being a healthy woman and not feel ashamed about being vulnerable and surrendering is to come back to the Lord, to see yourself the way He sees you, and really step into that identity of becoming a daughter. Because when you taste His love in that way, it's so much easier to identify when that similar kind of love comes from a man. Because Christ and the church, the bride and the groom, right? It's very masculine, feminine. So when you understand
Right.
that and you get a taste of that, it just really shapes your expectations and your what you're looking for in a man.
That's
That's
beautiful. I agree. I think also a masculine man will make you feel comfortable and safe being your feminine self also,
Yeah, absolutely.
and you help one another grow. That's why it's a complementary relationship. We need the other to be whole and complete. And I think that it just reminds me of the scripture, when man leaves his father and mother and clings to his wife and the two become one. Yeah, that complementary masculine and feminine, it's essential to a healthy relationship, and a healthy marriage. I completely agree. So you kind of talked about this a little bit, but how can people attract those types of, for women, attract those types of men and vice versa? Obviously, being a person of faith, integrity, and holding yourself to a high standard is going to attract like-minded types of people. But what are some ways that you've found really help in attracting people with your same values and ethics?
Okay, so I usually approach this in two ways. One is the very practical side of it, and the other is the more unknown or lesser known subconscious side to it. So I'll do the latter first. So I mentioned earlier about something known as the love template. I that's what I call it, but it's this thing that you have in your heart and mind. It's deeply embedded, and you say that it's the my type or my kind of person or someone that I just click with instantly. You're actually choosing people that you're already comfortable with, you're already familiar with. That's why so many women are attracted to people who are like their father,
Yeah, that
or
makes
attracted
sense.
to people who sort of elicit a certain response in you because that's what you thought love is, and so you're just waiting for a confirmation from the next person that you meet.
Yeah.
So if you want to start attracting healthier partners, this love template needs to have a makeover. And when I say that, I mean that when you think, okay, this is my type, we have these, like people make fun of it sometimes that I'm only attracted to bad boys. And when the nice ones come in, I feel that they are boring. I feel that they are too nice, too predictable. And why does this happen? It happens because we have labeled good, nice, healthy love as sometimes boring because we're so addicted to the chase. And so if you actively want to shift from, from bad guys to someone that is good and healthy, it's your personal taste that needs to change. Now, I'm not saying that, okay, you're a bad person because you want bad boys. It's not something that you're actively choosing, but there is a need inside of you which like pursuing a bad boy or chasing or having that chaos in your life is fulfilling some deep need because of which you're doing it. You wouldn't do it for nothing. So go deep within yourself and discover what's exactly going wrong. When I realized that I was always trying to chase guys who are way out of my league and try to get them to be attracted to me, and then they would leave and I would be heartbroken. But I realized, okay, why am I not even caring about someone who's interested in me? And I'm going outside and feeling like I'm interested in you. Will you be interested in me? I was doing that because I realized that I don't have a good view of myself. So anyone who likes me would be dumb. Because I'm not good, I'm not valuable. Nobody likes me. They're stupid, and I don't want stupid.
That's a
Right?
really
It
good
was
way to put
a
it,
very
yeah.
simple, like 5-year-old kid explanation of what I'm trying to say. But
I
that's
think it's really,
the
yeah,
whole
it's really
idea.
helpful. Honestly, I've never thought about it like that, but yes, that's so true. I think that's great. That's great.
So when we are always chasing for external validation, because someone that's unavailable and didn't want commitment or didn't really want things like this was able, I was able to turn their head for me. Imagine how much valuable that makes me feel about me. Right? So that means you have the deepest need to be seen, to be valued, to be loved. And we think that this new boy who's out there on his motorcycle is going to give it to you, but he cannot. It's this fallacy that we have got. So every time that you're choosing someone that's still unhealthy and you want to switch it, think about what need is inside you, which is making you choose those behaviors. Become aware of that. And when you have awareness, then you can switch. You'll feel that itch to still go after this old behavior because it's still fulfilling that need. But show your brain that new is still okay and you're going to be fine. And when your brain sort of tastes this new, beautiful, healthy, much more stable and secure kind of love, it will have a rewiring process. So you realize what's going on, and then you respond differently. It's very simple, but it's definitely harder in action. But that's what it is. When the next time you feel like this person is not matching my standard, and you're on the dating app, and you feel like you know in your heart that you shouldn't be talking to them anymore because they've sort of let you know that they're not your type. But you still want to do it because you're afraid of being lonely. Switch that. Tell yourself that I might be feeling lonely right now, and I'm going to fulfill that need in another way, which is spending more time with my girls or seeing my parents or doing something that invests into myself, that pours back into myself, instead of, thinking and imagining that this guy is going to fulfill, your need. That's how you sort of change and switch your behaviors.
I like
And
that.
definitely the practical aspect is paying attention to red flags and knowing what stage of dating you're in. I think we'll talk more about that in a bit. So if
Yeah, let's dive into red flags.
you
I think people will really like hearing about this stuff, and I think some of it we can all relate to. But what are some common red flags you've seen in your experience coaching women and in your personal dating experience? And then, how can people better identify those red flags and green flags as they pursue partners?
Yeah, I love this. I love talking about this.
It's the best.
So on a typical day, when the way that you meet a person would be you either meet them on an app or you meet them in some, social circle, right? So either way, the only way that you can actually keep your eyes open, like you can spot red flags pretty easily if you keep your eyes open. It's very simple. So if you're on an app and you see that they have good pictures and they've written it out very well, it means that they are serious. It means that they have taken the time and invested that time into, doing this because they want something out of it. Now, this is not a true thing. It's just an overall what we've observed, right? So that's how it's typically done. If you like somebody's profile and they sort of text first or, like your profile back, it means that they are active, they want something. So that's how you get things started. And with time, you'll know, like, I think most likely in a couple of days or in a week at max, you'll know if they are that kind of man who is initiating the text or is at least putting in effort just as much as you are. They would want to, talk about important things or at least things which are more substantial instead of saying, what are you doing or how was your weekend, right? And that's good for like a starter text sometimes. But if that's happening consistently, you know that this person isn't really looking to take the conversation elsewhere or, make it more serious. So just really keeping your eyes open is very key. And I know this sounds like very simple advice, but trust me, many people on their first date or after their first date sort of, put their mind behind and just focus on how they're feeling in their heart. And that sort of becomes like a problem because then 6 months later, you wake up and you're like, wait a minute, I didn't see this back then. And that can happen sometimes when this person actively or intentionally hides something from you. But if you have done the process of, clearing out your own baggage, learning the kind of love that you want and having that model in front of your eyes, then it'll be a lot easier for you to identify what's right and what's wrong. Like, for example, if you're on a date, you know how you he's right in front of you. You can watch what he's doing, what's he talking about, what kind of topics light him up, what kind of things does he love to talk about, what are topics that he's automatically gravitating towards. Those things say a lot about him. Sometimes men will literally tell you how they are or what they are, but we still don't believe them. Like, for example, he might say that I'm not really a family guy. I'm just like, I would love to just chill on the weekends with the boys. And you're sitting there being like, he's nice. I know he just said he doesn't want a family, but it's okay. I can make him want one. And
But
we
I like how I'm feeling on this date. He seems
exactly.
nice. Yeah, you're
Exactly.
so right. You're so right.
Yeah, so
Yeah,
that's
I
how
agree.
it really is that simple. And I think one way that you can really identify red and green flags is to understand what stage of relationship you're in. So for my clients, and for everyone that I teach, I break it down into three very simple steps. First stage is just the initial, talking, very, very casual, very simple talking stage. It usually lasts from like your first date to maybe second or third date, right? I think by the end of the third date, you know for sure whether or not you want to continue dating or, keeping to see this person. In that first stage, you're supposed to ask questions that will help you decide by the info that you get, whether or not you want to go on the next date with them. So you do that on all three dates. Like, for example, on my first date, I would ask someone, how is your relationship with the Lord? Or what is the Lord doing for you in this particular season? Again, I'm already assuming that he has a relationship with the Lord. And if he doesn't, I'll know pretty soon. And if he does, I'll know pretty soon. And if he doesn't, and I get to know that, then I'm not probably not gonna have a second date, right? So that way you don't waste your time. You literally ask for what you want and you get it. It's very easy to make a decision. Like you gotta talk about the important things which are just like deal breakers or absolute non-negotiables. Bring it up and discuss it. If you feel that this person is good to go with, then you could sort of move to the second stage, which is more, like now you're actively not talking to other guys, you're just with this person. You're not his girlfriend yet, but you sort of know that it's going somewhere. And at this second stage, you should be able to see some sort of leadership on his end, where he's also being very intentional in pursuing you, letting you know how he feels. So these things are very important, like emotional vulnerability, openness. As a man, his ability to lead, to protect you, provide for you, consistent communication, very key. So more than looking at how he's dressing or what kind of in way he talks or is he funny enough, obviously physical attraction has its place, but these things are very key. So as you look at these things and match it up with, your list or your general view of what you want in a partner, it's very easy. It's not that difficult to look at the red and green flags. And green flags are you can spot it when you have done the work and you're able to, have this new idea of love, because the most common green flags are that he will lead. That's the biggest one, in my opinion. Any man that is personally invested in anything, you know that by when you see that they are automatically assuming leadership in that relationship. So he will ask to see you more. He will ask to, talk over the phone. He'll call first. He will do something to, sort of initiate that communication, that connection. It's almost like a lion or some tiger in the jungle. If they're seeing a prey, they will not really wait and sit there with their hands folded like TV to see if someone else is coming and getting this woman. Right? They will jump on it first because they see some value in it. Right? That's how a
True.
man who sees some potential in you, some value, some worth would do. They're not gonna just wife you up right away, but they would at least show some amount of, connection, some sort of, interest to some investment into the relationship. That's the second stage where you talk about some very important things, and if it doesn't work out, then you obviously, face it and just sort of go your own separate ways. The second stage usually ends in you being his girlfriend, or at least like making it official and knowing for sure that, okay, this is it now, it's you and me. And then you're actively discerning marriage. So during this stage, like your parents would know, and your close friends have probably met him, or obviously it depends on your own personal timeline and how many times you meet and what you've been speaking on those particular dates. But that's sort of like it's very unique from person to person, but these are the kind of like generalized statements that could apply to everybody mostly.
That's all very helpful, I think. And one more thing I wanted to add about kind of the intentionality kind of conversation. I listened to this other podcast, the Dr. John Deloney Show. I don't know if you've heard of that one, but he always says that behavior is a language. And so a man who wants to pursue you and is interested in you will show you that he is. And I think a lot of women, especially, get caught in these switch situationships where they're like, he says he really likes me and he says all the right things and, he's nice to my friends and, but yeah, he hasn't really taken me out on a real date, I guess, or, he doesn't want to meet my parents when they come in town or things like this. And I think I've been caught in those situationships too. And that was, yeah. And it's so frustrating because you just want to trust that these guys have your best intentions at heart. But I think the biggest, one of the other biggest differences that I noticed when I met my husband was the day after we talked for a really long time, he asked me on a date and he told me, "Hey, I really want to do this the right way. Will you go on a date with me?" The date started with mass and then we went to a nice restaurant and we talked about our families and all these really amazing, important things that I loved talking about. And I saw that he was, I mean, it really made me like, oh, this is what it's supposed to feel like when someone is actually invested in you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
Looking like
so yeah.
I totally second you on this,
Yeah.
because when my last situationship was almost like 2 years ago, and immediately after that, I think a couple of months later, I met the person that I'm with now, and
Oh.
I could see the stark difference from what I was hearing, in their language, in their communication, because they were both the same age, and I felt like, because that's this other person that I had been, who was just driving me crazy, making me overthink in all particular ways, I was like, okay, maybe he's just 27, that's why he can't do it. Like, I'm sure he has so many career goals and dreams, and I'm the one who's, making him, pulling him out of that, dragging him into a family, it's not gonna work. I'm the bad guy.
Oh,
And then a
yeah.
couple of months later, I'm with this person, and out of nowhere, he just meets me and he's like, Judith, I really want to do this the right way. And I know that I really want to have a family in this much time. And I see you being that woman, and you're a godly good woman. And I'm like, you're the same age. How can you, like, don't you have career goals or something? And I
Right.
realize that it's not really about a particular age or a particular, anything. It's really the heart. If they want to commit, they will. If they want to do things the right way, they will most definitely. They might not be perfect in planning the right date or saying the most perfect romantic things, but that intentionality, that consistent communication will always be there. They would never, sort of leave you hanging on a cliff just to, keep that spice or whatever, to make you more interested in them. It's always going to be this most secure thing where you know that they have your back at all times.
And that carries through into marriage when you really need to be super open about what you're feeling emotionally, the goals that you have, because life is crazy, and even though you live together, it's really easy to not communicate well and not share. So when you're dating, look for someone who is an over communicator, shares their feelings, emotionally available, because that's the kind of partner you want long term. And there's such a, I know we were talking about kind of like the bad boy attraction and the appeal of that, but I just want to encourage anyone who feels like that's the only type of guy that they're attracted to. I married a really nice guy, and I've been able to take more risks and feel more safe and more in love and like on fire than I have ever felt going for a bad boy, And that is going to last me my whole life, because we're married. So I would just say there's freedom in security, kind of like how there's freedom in the church and belonging to the Catholic faith. Freedom is not just doing whatever you want. It's having the ability to choose goodness and truth and beauty. And yeah, I think it's so important to look for that when you're seeking out a spouse. So, kind of with that, let's talk about faith in relationships, and how can women and men incorporate their faith into their dating relationships, in order to prepare for a strong foundation, or in order to build a strong foundation for a future marriage.
Yeah, seriously. I just want to preface this by saying that for the longest span of my life, I never really dated Christians or Catholics, because in India, there's Christians are just 3% of the entire population. So it's not that, it's not this abundance of Christian people who pursue the Lord. And so growing up, I never really felt like faith mattered that much. And I was almost ready to marry this non-Christian person of a completely different faith. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to convert my religion. And I'm so glad I didn't do that, because now when I am with a person who wants to initiate praying over me, who wants to initiate praying the rosary and ask me how my Bible study went and discuss church sermons together, I realize how beautiful it is. So if you feel, and to anyone who's listening, if you feel that bringing in faith is going to be boring or making it less interesting or for some reason just weird, really, no, that's not what it is. It's actually so beautiful because when you bring the Lord in, you both become stronger. That's like the law, the strongest law in the universe. When it comes to dating, you just, because if the Lord is pouring love into your heart, your heart is expanding because His love is so much. And when your heart expands, you can also take in this other person, their faults, their weaknesses, their goodness, and it becomes like this beautiful, strong union. A cord of three cannot be broken, right? So, I started doing this only recently, but I feel like it has had the best impact. So, one thing that I have already started doing with anyone that I talk to and before I met my now boyfriend is I said this earlier, like have conversations which already assume that he has a personal relationship with the Lord. So if he doesn't, he'll start doing it or it won't work out. Because I love to have conversations with my boyfriend about how the Lord is working in our lives, little tiny miracles that we saw that day, or how he protected us from some, thing that happened to us, or how he's blessing us in our work. It's a beautiful way to bring the Lord together and really be intentional without making it weird or too much church-like, if that is like something that people are afraid of. And the other thing is pray often and let him lead. This has been beautiful for my relationship. Letting him lead in prayer, it also sort of puts it in his mind that he's the leader and gives him that freedom. So I remember the first time that I was praying the rosary with my boyfriend. It was the New Year. The very first New Year's that we celebrated in the relationship, and we were in the chapel adoring the sacrament, and we were praying the rosary. And he did everything. He led the song, Ave Maria, and then he led the prayer. And I was just sitting there and I was thanking the Lord because this was so beautiful. I didn't really have to go in and think about everything, but he was doing it as a man, as a leader. And then it really surprised me when he said the entire litany to Our Lady. Without, like, it was memorized. He didn't open a book. Like,
Oh my gosh.
I was shook. I was shook. And I was like, God, thank
Oh.
you. That is one godly man. You know, he prays his rosary
Yes.
when he has the entire litany memorized by heart.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. Yeah, he sounds awesome. That's so great. Aw.
It is. And I think the next thing that, I think one thing that really strengthened my relationship with this man is to watch a lot of Christian or faith-based movies or like talks together. So a lot of Ascension Presents, a lot of,
Yep.
Steubenville conferences sessions or Sikh conference sessions. We watched them. I prepared like this whole playlist, and I was like, hey, I think we should watch this together. And he was really key. He was very prompt on, like, yeah, let's watch this today. And then we would sit and watch it for a good 45 minutes and then have a discussion about it, because and that really helped us to frame our minds in the same way so that we were looking at the same thing. It helped us to lead our relationship in that way because neither of us was, perfect in or grew up knowing how to have a very good relationship. Many of us don't have it modeled in our families. Many of us don't see it among friends because, I mean, so many people in college, on campus, are just hooking up or having sort of like these very tumultuous relationships. You don't really, nobody grew up with that knowledge. So if someone is really invested in learning about it, especially from a faith-based source, that really helps both of you to be molded in the same manner so that you develop the same goals in your mind and then have a plan to walk towards it. So that is a very beautiful way to sort of have God in the middle of your relationship, like just inviting him in and he comes over. It's really not that difficult. Just going to mass, saying the rosary, discussing about different saints on their feast days and talking about their lives. It's
Yeah, it's
very
beautiful.
simple. It's very beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I think I forget where I heard this, but somewhere someone said to me, a good relationship is kind of, you can kind of tell a good relationship that's very rooted in faith when you're running toward Jesus and then you look to the side and you see someone running to Jesus with you. And when the goal of marriage is to get your spouse to heaven, I think that's such a good image to keep in mind that our eyes should be fixed on God. You know, all of this is for him. Our vocation is a gift that he gave us. And yeah, that's the whole point. So let's go for it.
Absolutely.
So I just want to hear before we wrap up, could you share a success story of, you know, one of your clients or something transformative that one of your clients experienced with your guidance, and then we'll kind of start wrapping up.
Awesome. Back in 2022, my client, her name is Melissa, she came to me and it was terrible because she had just broken up, and she was sitting in her car, I remember, just bawling out because of what had happened. And it really hurts when, you have every other aspect of your life very going very beautifully, but you want the foundation, which is like love and marriage, to be there, but it's just not happening for you. And we sort of like decided to work together. So then I was just transitioning out of like breakup coaching to dating coaching. So it was during that time. So I began to work with her, and she was really open and teachable to the Lord. So we started working with, all of these things in the past, because this was not the first relationship that she had, which was this way, where the man was not taking re leadership. She had to drive, she had to pay for dates, she had to initiate the dates. So it was bad. And then after all of that, he was the one to sort of, give her a lot of crap, and it was just not good, like
Yeah,
very
not good.
ungrateful of a man. So this was a pattern that she had seen in like the last three or four people that she had dated. And then she also told me that there's this one schoolmate of hers who is nice, kind of sweet, and wants to take her out, but she won't go out with him because he's boring. So I instantly saw that pattern, and we had to work through it because of her attachment style and the way that she had grown up with in her family with her siblings and her parents. She sort of become this kid where she will rather be quiet than speak up, because she doesn't want to ruffle your feathers or spoil the relationship, because peace and non-confrontational environments are very important to her. So I realized, okay, that's what's ruining your relationships, because you gotta speak up. And we worked through that. We worked through, releasing shame and actually becoming your feminine woman, not being afraid to ask for love, for dates, for consistency in a relationship from a man. That's actually what you are supposed to always have. That's how your godly father loves you. And therefore, he will not let any other man, who's not like him, just come and take your heart away, because he knows it's not good for you. So strengthening your relationship with Jesus. We did all those beautiful things. And 8 months later, we sort of finished. She graduated from the program, and I didn't really see her after that. But then a few months later, in November of 2023, she texts me and she's like, "Hey, guess what? I got a boyfriend." And he's sweet and he's nice, but he's also very much macho military guy. So she always liked military men, and he was just like that. So, before his last deployment, he got He went spoke with her father and got her and a promise ring and everything, all the good stuff.
Aww.
So if you feel like that's impossible in this day and age, it's really not. You just have to find that one right person that God has for you, and it always happens. It just really takes confidence in the Lord and that work that you need to do within yourself, right? Because God won't really give you something which you can't handle or take care of. So he'll always prepare you before giving you that blessing. So it really takes that inner work. And now they are planning their wedding.
Oh, that's
So
amazing.
it's just
Oh,
beautiful.
yeah. That's so cool. So that's such, I'm sure it's such an amazing feeling to kind of work with someone through that and just see these
Yeah.
happy results. That's so awesome. Okay, so any final thoughts or words of encouragement for people who are trying to navigate this tricky dating world? Anything else you want to share with the listeners before we sign off?
Yes, I just want to say one thing, and that is remember who you are. Become who you are. That's what JP 2 says. He's one of my favorite saints. And really, if you have gone on a path where you're wounded or you've been hurt so many times that you feel it's impossible to find love again, or you want a godly relationship but you feel unworthy, come back to who you really are, come back to who you were made to be, and become that. It says in Ephesians that put on the new self, right? It's almost like putting on a cloth. You won't always feel like it's your normal thing. It'll feel like something external, but you gotta wake up every day and put that thing on until it becomes second nature. So do that, both to women and to men. Like, if you feel like you want a godly relationship but you're not worthy enough or you're not godly enough, then become that. Truly become godly. Do the work that you need to do before you enter into dating. And don't be afraid, really. Like, just being a daughter of God as you are, as a young Catholic man and woman, is to not be afraid, is to trust in the Lord, is to, give all your dreams and your things to him, no matter what. And that is what it really like. When you become that, there's no way he's not gonna give you what he said he would. He's waiting to bless us more than we are waiting to be blessed. He's wanting to give you your husband or your wife more than you are searching and seeking that. But obviously, as a good father, as any good father would, he's gonna make sure that you're ready for it first, right? So yeah, and don't give up. Don't give up. Sometimes it's just a matter of time. It's just that very often we just sort of quit after one or two good dates. But sometimes it's gonna take a while, and maybe the Lord is teaching you things in that time. So don't give up. Dating is fun if you have the right mindset towards it. So don't give up.
That's amazing advice. Thank you so much, Judith, for being here. That was such an awesome conversation.
For having me, I really appreciate that.
If you enjoyed this episode of After Cana, share it with a friend, leave a review, or head to the Fairest Love website for more resources on building relationships and families of faith.